Ever stop and think about what actually keeps, say, a community's most vital resources safe? Like, really safe.
It's something we often take for granted, isn't it?
Exactly. Well, today we're taking a deep dive into this really fascinating document. It's a contract amendment for professional engineering services.
Right.
And it sort of pulls back the curtain on dam safety and just meticulous planning.
Yeah, this one centers specifically on the Shawnee Twin Lake Dam Number 1. And what's remarkable, I think, is how this single agreement lays out this really comprehensive scope of work. It's designed not just to maintain the dam's integrity, but to ensure its continued safety as the primary public water supply for years to come.
Okay, let's unpack this then. Our mission today is really to distill the key info from this. Well, it's an incredibly detailed agreement.
It really is.
We want to give you a clear understanding of the complex processes involved in these big infrastructure projects. Everything from predicting potential hazards, to navigating environmental regulations. You'll really see how just one document like this outlines years of work and, frankly, significant investment in public safety.
Absolutely.
So the document immediately zeroes in on Shawnee Twin Lake Dam Number 1. For anyone maybe not familiar, what makes this particular dam so critical? And, what issues are actually prompting this pretty extensive project?
Well, what's essential to understand here is that Shawnee Twin Lakes Number 1 and Number 2, they aren't just any lakes. They serve as the primary public water supply source.
The primary
Yeah,
source.
for the entire city of Shawnee and the surrounding area. So,
Yeah.
pretty vital. This project focuses specifically on Dam Number 1 because, well, showing some signs of wear.
Okay. And what are those specific signs, the key issues they're trying to address here?
So the main concerns outlined in this amendment, they're twofold, really. First, there's degraded riprap on the extreme slope and also in the spillway.
Riprap. Okay.
And second, there's significant vegetation overgrowth on the lower slope and the toe of the dam. They call that clearing and grubbing.
Right. And these aren't just cosmetic fixes, I assume.
Oh, definitely not.
Yeah.
That degraded riprap, it sounds simple, but it signals erosion. And erosion can really compromise the dam's structural integrity, especially, during high water events. And the vegetation, it might look harmless, but it can hide underlying problems, cracks, seepage, things like that. And the roots themselves can actually damage the dam structure over time. So routine clearing is just fundamental safety.
So two distinct components to the overall work then, each with its own challenges.
Exactly. The riprap project, it involves repairing the rock armor itself, but also repaving the road across the dam and replacing the upstream guardrail. So it's a bit more comprehensive.
Okay.
The other part is that essential clearing and grubbing. Now, here's an important project management detail. While both parts have design packages worked up, the actual bid and construction phase services, initially, they're only included for the clearing and grubbing project.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, the riprap construction, that might get added later, maybe through another amendment. So it's a kind of sequencing to the whole thing.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, as I was reading this, the dam breach modeling part really jumped out at me. It sounds incredibly complex. How do engineers even begin to assess those kinds of risks, predicting something like a dam breach?
Yeah, that's a really critical piece of dam safety.
Yeah.
And a core component of these services is dam breach modeling and inundation mapping.
Inundation mapping.
Right. The goal is to accurately predict the downstream impact, under various hypothetical scenarios, basically playing out what-if situations in a controlled virtual environment.
What sort of what-ifs, what kind of scenarios are they modeling?
Well, they use a pretty sophisticated tool, a two-dimensional unsteady flow model. It's called HECAS.
HECRAS.
Think of it like an advanced computer simulation. It predicts how water would flow across a complex landscape. Lets engineers see a virtual flood without obviously the real-world risk.
Right.
And they evaluate several critical situations. There's a sunny day breach. That means a breach under normal water levels. Then there's a design flood.
A design flood.
Yeah. Specifically, half of the probable maximum precipitation, or 12 PMP. They model that with a breach and without a breach.
Half the probable maximum precipitation. That sounds like a lot of rain.
It is, yeah. To give you some perspective, the probable maximum precipitation, PMP, that's the theoretical maximum rainfall that could physically happen in a given area.
Wow.
So even half of that is an incredibly intense, very rare event. It really pushes the dam's limits, tests its resilience against, the most extreme weather you could imagine.
Okay. And they also model an overtopping scenario.
Exactly. A barely overtopping scenario. Again, both with and without a breach occurring. they try to cover the key failure modes.
And how far downstream are we talking? If there was a breach, what's the potential impact zone?
Well, based on their initial estimates, empirical estimates, the breach inundation length probably won't exceed about 20 miles downstream.
20 miles, okay.
And the results from these models, they get used to prepare these incredibly detailed inundation maps. They show water depth, sure, but also depth times velocity.
Why depth times velocity?
Because that's critical. It's not just how deep the water is, but how fast it's moving that really determines its destructive power. It's a key metric for predicting damage to buildings, roads, you know, infrastructure.
So they're meticulously mapping out these potential flood zones. What's the dam's current official hazard classification? Does this project affect that?
Good question. According to the Oklahoma Dam Inventory, Shawnee Twin Lake Dam No. 1 is currently classified as a high-hazard dam.
High hazard.
And a significant part of this project is to thoroughly evaluate that downstream hazard using the Oklahoma Water Resources Board's, the OWRB's, latest criteria, and potentially reclassify it based on their findings.
So the classification could change.
It could. Depending on what the detailed modeling and evaluation shows, they'll submit all those findings in comprehensive technical reports to the OWRB.
Right. So once the risks are understood, the issues identified, how do they translate all that analysis into, well, actual plans? What happens in the design phase?
The design phase, yeah, that's where the conceptual plans become, you know, tangible blueprints.
Mm-hmm.
It involves a very structured approach, rigorous project management, keeping schedules on track, coordinating constantly between the engineering firm and the city.
Mm-hmm.
And crucially, they embed strong quality control and quality assurance processes. That includes an internal constructability review.
Constructability review? What's that?
It's basically a deep dive into the design itself, specifically looking for potential problems during construction.
Mm-hmm.
Can this actually be built efficiently? Are there clashes? Are the specs clear? They try to catch those headaches on paper long before they become expensive issues out in the field.
So this is where they create the ultimate instruction manual for the builders. Single detail covered.
They prepare detailed drawings, specifications, the whole suite of construction contract documents.
Mm-hmm.
These documents then get meticulously submitted to the OWRB Dam Safety Division for their approval. And remember, as we said, two separate design packages get developed, one for the riprap repair and another for the clearing and grubbing. And there are specific milestones, too, like design submittals at 90% completion, then 100% completion for the city to review and sign off on.
Yeah.
Lots of checks and balances.
Makes sense. Now, with any big infrastructure project like this, you always hear about environmental regulations. What are the key environmental hurdles they anticipate here?
Yeah, that's a big one. A significant consideration for this rehab project is the assumption, and it is an assumption at this stage, that it'll require a Section 404 permit from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the USACE.
Section 404, why is that needed?
Because the work involves discharging dredged or fill material into what are assumed to be waters of the U.S., working in or near the lake, disturbing soil, placing riprap that often triggers this requirement.
Okay. And what's the hoped-for path for getting that permit, the simplest route?
Well, the plan assumes the project can meet the conditions of something called a nationwide permit. Specifically, Nationwide Permit 3, which covers maintenance activities.
Nationwide Permit 3.
Okay.
This usually involves submitting an aquatic resources delineation report, basically mapping any wetlands or streams, and a pre-construction notification, a PCN, to the Tulsa District of the USEE. It's generally less complex than other permit types.
But what if it turns out not to be that simple? Are there, you know, potential roadblocks?
Oh, absolutely. That's a really important contingency they have to plan for. If the Corps decides, nope, this doesn't fit Nationwide 3, maybe because of the scale or specific impacts, then they might require an individual permit. Or maybe a compensatory mitigation plan, like creating a wetland elsewhere to make up for impacts. Or even a formal Section 7 consultation under the Endangered Species Act if protected species might be affected.
And any of those would mean additional services.
Yeah.
Which means more time, more money, more complexity. Same goes for things like cultural resources surveys or detailed endangered species surveys. They assume those aren't needed because the site's already been disturbed.
Right.
But if a federal agency disagrees, well, that triggers additional services too. It just shows how many variables can pop up.
And I remember reading something about a deadline connected to that nationwide permit.
You did. Yes, that's a key point. The current version of Nationwide Permit 3, the one they hope to use, it expires on March 14th, 2026.
Oh, okay. That's not that far away in project terms.
Exactly. If the project isn't actually under construction, or at least under contract to start construction, before that date, they'd likely need to get re-verified under whatever new or modified permit exists then.
Which could mean delays.
Could mean delays, could mean different conditions, and yes, likely additional services and cost. It really underscores the tight timelines and the sort of regulatory maze these projects have to navigate.
Definitely. Okay, so let's assume the design is done, permits are squared away. How do they actually get the physical work started? Focusing first on that clearing and grubbing project.
Right. For the clearing and grubbing, the bid phase is the next crucial step. This involves the engineering firm helping the city get bids from contractors.
How do they help?
They handle pretty much the whole process. Issuing the formal notice to bidders, printing and distributing all the bid documents, the plans, the specs, answering questions from contractors, even helping run a pre-bid conference and a site tour so everyone knows exactly what the job entails.
Got it. And once they pick a contractor, what happens during the actual construction? What kind of oversight does the engineering firm provide?
Okay, so during construction, the firm provides general representation, and they assign someone called a resident project representative, or RPR, to be on site. But here's a really important distinction they make clear in the contract. The engineering firm does not guarantee the contractor's work. They aren't responsible for how the contractor does the job, their methods, their techniques, or even their safety procedures.
That seems like a significant limitation. If they aren't guaranteeing the work or supervising the contractor like a foreman would, what is the RPR actually doing out there every day?
That's the key question, right? The RPR is defined as a qualified inspector. They act as the certifying engineer's agent, their eyes and ears on the site. The assumption here is they'll be on site about 20 hours per week over an estimated 2-month construction period for the clearing work.
20 hours a week. And their main job is?
Their main job is to observe the work as it progresses. Check that it generally aligns with the plans and specifications in the contract documents. Report any defects or deviations they see. And implement the quality assurance testing plan, making sure soil compaction tests, things like that, get done, and communicating those results back.
Okay, observation and reporting. Do they have the authority to actually stop the work if they see a problem?
That brings up another critical point about their authority. The RPR has very specific limits. They cannot, for example, authorize changes to the contract documents or approve substituting different materials.
Right.
And crucially, the RPR does not have stop work authority, except for immediate worker safety or public safety reasons.
Only for safety.
Okay, exactly. If they see something unsafe, they can step in. Otherwise, their role is to report issues up the chain. They also have to furnish daily progress reports and immediately report any accidents. So primarily observers and communicators operating within a very defined scope.
It sounds like an incredibly detailed, multifaceted undertaking. Really covers years of effort when you think about it all. What are the timelines for these different phases? And, you know, what's the bottom line, the financial investment for all this professional service?
Yeah, the schedule is laid out pretty clearly, usually starting from the Notice to Proceed, or NTP, for instance, that dam breach inundation mapping we talked about. That's slated for completion within 180 days of the NTP. So about 6 months.
Okay.
Both the clearing grubbing design and the riprap replacement design, they have their 90% design submittals due within 90 days of NTP. Then the final 100% plans follow within 30 days after the city resolves any review comments. So quite structured.
And the overall cost for all these engineering services, does the document break down where that money goes?
It does. The total lump sum fee for all the services we've discussed, the modeling, design, permitting, bid phase, construction phase for the clearing, is set as not to exceed $329,700.
$330,000, roughly.
Right. And, you know, that might sound like a lot for what seems like maintenance, but it gives you a fantastic window into how these infrastructure budgets get allocated. It's not just throwing rocks on a slope, right?
Clearly not.
Invoicing happens monthly based on the percentage complete for each major task. And yeah, they break it down. Breach modeling and mapping is budgeted around $40,800. The whole design phase is about $199,400.
And that includes both the riprap and the clearing design.
Exactly. The riprap design is the larger chunk, about $149,200. And the clearing design is about $50,200. Then environmental permitting is pegged at $29,400. And finally, the bid and construction phases, just for the clearing and grubbing, add another $10,800 and $49,300 respectively.
Wow.
It really shows the significant engineering effort and investment needed just to keep these vital systems running safely.
So we've just done this deep dive into, well, the exhaustive planning and engineering needed just to maintain one piece of critical public infrastructure. It's really a testament, isn't it? To the meticulous detail, the risk assessment, the regulatory navigation, all coming together for this single vital project at Shawnee Twin Lake Dam number one.
Absolutely. I mean, from modeling potential dam breaches, something you hope never, ever happens, to navigating those complex environmental permits, and then providing that careful on-site oversight during construction.
Yeah.
You really see the intricate layers involved.
Yeah.
Just safeguarding something as fundamental as a city's water supply. Yeah. It's far more involved than most people probably realize.
It really makes you wonder, doesn't it, what other unseen layers of planning and protection are quietly underpinning, you know, the everyday services and safety we often just take for granted, our roads, our power grids.
Indeed. Think about the sheer foresight, the engineering precision required just to ensure a critical resource like this dam remains safe and operational for decades.
Mm.
It's quietly securing the future for that whole community.
Mm.
It really highlights how many unseen hands, how much expertise contributes to the smooth functioning of our daily lives, often completely behind the scenes. Makes you think.